Well, just looking back over this past week, again, it's been another week of mixed data reads coming out the US. So you've got some indications that growth is slowing, but you've also got indications that inflation is pretty sticky with that. And this is going to present a bit of a conundrum when the Fed meets this week. In fact, the same story presents a conundrum for just about every central bank. We've got three of them meeting this week. We've got the RBA, we've got the Fed, and we've also got the ECB. So I'll get onto those in a minute. But just looking back at some of this data that's come out of the United States over the past week, yeah, we've got some signs that housing is continuing to pick up. And it may have been doing it for a while. One of the indicators we get out is quite an old one, and it was the February Case-Shiller House Price Index in the United States. This one, month on month, has had a negative sign on the front of it for at least the last 8 months. And it was expected to have a negative sign on it still for the February. You know, it's quite a dated, so by the time they get these indices out, it's actually quite dated. But it wasn't minus 0.4, as the market expected. It was actually into positive territory, plus 0.1. And there's indications that house prices have lifted quite a bit in the US since then. So rather like here in Australia, you've got this bit of revival starting to run through the housing side of things. And we saw it there with the March new home sales data too. This was expected to lift by about 1.1% for the month. It lifted by 9.6% for the month. So quite clearly, the very leading edge there, in housing, it's starting to get quite buoyant again as far as the US is concerned. We also had some indications relating to the US manufacturing side. This is the weakest part of the US economy, but oddly enough, the lead indicator on that, durable goods orders, also took a turn for the stronger in the month of March. So it was up by 3.2%. The market was looking for a 0.8% rise. And core orders, when you take out the lumpier items, the defence and these sorts of bits and pieces, they were still up by 0.3%. These, again, have been falling for many, many months. But then we got a rearward look at where growth has been for Q1, so over the first quarter. And it did show some signs of slowing. So we saw growth in the United States come back from 2.6% annualized growth back in Q4 last year down to 1.1%. It was hoped to be up around 2. But it was pretty quirky because inside that number, domestic spending driven by consumer spending was actually very strong. So we had consumer spending, which was stronger than it was way back in Q4. It was up by 3.7% annualized. Now, many have said this is probably a last fling of people getting very, very excited. And there's a number of analysts are saying, look, probably it's going to take a bit of a dip on that because it was such a strong reading for consumption spending. And that's going to drag GDP even lower when we get to Q2. You've got one or two analysts who even think it might have a negative sign on it for Q2. But, that's, in a way, that's you can't deny that it wasn't strong going back there in the first quarter. And the other part that was above expectations was the GDP deflator. That was running still above 4. We also had the monthly March core personal consumption expenditure deflator came out. And this is still running way too high as far as the Fed's concerned. It's still at 4.6% year on year, and it only trickled down from 4.7. This speaks to the stickiness of inflation, the difficulty of getting it under control. And another indicator which showed some of the pressures which are building through the system was the first quarter employment cost index that came out in the US as well. First quarter employment cost index was higher than expected. It was up 1.2% quarter on quarter. Market was looking for 1.1. It was 1.1 the quarter before that. So employment costs are still very, very high. So you've got this terrible mix that faces the Fed when they go to their meeting, which is on Wednesday this week, where you know, you've still got signs that inflation is holding up, that everything that relates to inflation, such as the strength of the labour market, what's happening to wages, still tending to underpin inflation. Not as high as it was, but no chance at all of getting it down to 2%, their target, any time in the foreseeable future. So at this stage, and against what, you know, the bond market in the US is suggesting, the bond market is suggesting that, you know, the Fed's pivoting, it's, you know, and very quickly it's going to get towards rate cutting. And it's the only way you can interpret, you know, the way in which your 1 and 2 year yields in the US are sitting way below where the current Fed funds rate is at 5%. And yet, the FOMC meeting this week is more likely than not to deliver another 25 basis point hike. That'll probably be to 5.25%. The Fed will still be relatively hawkish, and at the very least will be indicating that it's going to take time before it can bring these rates down. And that's entirely opposite to the way in which, you know, obviously bond yields are sitting at the moment, the view is, yes, it's going to get to cutting pretty quickly, and it's going to be aggressive cutting because the US is going to be facing recession. The problem is that there's still an inflation problem still to deal with, which may lead to being quite a long process before the Fed can get to that cutting. So I think we should expect some volatility running through bond yields, where every now and then you get some pickups in bond yields still, particularly in the shorter term yields, from where they sit currently. Some of the other data that comes out this week ahead of the Fed meeting, at least they'll have the advantage of some of the leading indicators. So, for example, we've got the ISM Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index that comes out later today. That one is softish. It was 46.3 going back to March. It's expected that it might lift a little to 46.7, still below the expansion contraction line, which is generally looked on as being 50 on that index. And we also get on Wednesday the April non-manufacturing PMI, ISM non-manufacturing PMI services sector PMI. That one, if anything, is probably going to rise, and it was at 51.2. Going back to March, probably will get up to 51.8. So again, you know, those mixed indicators running for the Fed before its decision. And then once the decision's over, you know, we get things like non-farm payrolls coming out on Friday. And at this stage, whilst the market expects it to be a little bit weaker, they still look pretty, it's a tight labour market. Average hourly earnings are expected to lift another 0.3% month on month. That would keep the annual rate of change at 4.2%. Every wage indication we look at in the United States is well north of 4%. Those have got to get down into the low threes, if not a little lower, to be consistent with the Fed's target of 2%, and they're just not getting there. And what's keeping them up is that you've still got strengths running through employment growth. Over the last few months, non-farm payrolls have beaten market expectations. You know, last month, for March, they came in up another 236,000. The market thinks that'll soften off a bit to 180,000. We'll wait and see. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see another 200,000 reading. And the unemployment rate, and what I would say about 200,000 reading, what the Fed needs to see to be confident about wage growth edging down towards what's consistent with their target over time is a period of several months where non-farm payrolls average only about 30,000 a month. You know, we're averaging well above 200,000 a month at the moment. So it's a long way to go to get these into the sorts of bands that the Fed's going to be comfortable with. And similarly so with the unemployment rate. The unemployment rate still sitting down at near its lowest reading since 1969. It was at 3.5% going back to the month of March. Market thinks it might edge up to 3.6. We'll wait and see. But it needs to have a period above 4% again to be consistent with the Fed's inflation target over time. Just moving to China, there was not a lot of notes coming out there. They've got a lot of holidays coming up this week. This is when, you know, they get their spring holidays. So they what we normally get at the beginning of the month and over the turn of the month, the purchasing managers' indices, some of those came out a little bit early. So we had the official ones came out on Saturday, and the manufacturing PMI came down from 51.9 to 49.2, so that was on the soft side. The non-manufacturing PMI also came back, but it was from a very high reading of 58.2 down to 56.4. It's still relatively strong. We've got the CAKES inversions of these coming out much later in the week once the holidays are largely passed. So the CAKES in manufacturing PMI are coming out on Thursday and Friday for the manufacturing and services sector PMIs for the CAKES in surveys. They were sitting at 50 and 57.8 respectively going back last month. Wait and see how those ones pan out. China is basically expanding and is going in the opposite direction to most other economies, where we are getting some slowing through growth with stickiness and inflation. China's the exact opposite of that. We've got pretty reasonable expansion in economic growth, after, rebounding after the shutdowns going back a few months ago, at the same time as we've got very low inflation in China. So quite a different set of circumstances. China's going to be one of the supports for global economic growth going through the course of this year. Then moving to Australia. And last week we had the CPI came out, the quarterly CPI. We also had the monthly. The monthly came down a little bit further, down to 6.3% year on year. That was for the month of March. The Q1 CPI, which is the key one that the Reserve Bank will be looking at, it's a weird one because the headline was slightly on the high side of expectations. It was 1.4% against 1.3% quarter on quarter. The annual rate came down on that, though, from 7.8% year on year to 7. And it's quite clear that the peak for Australian inflation was late last year, going into the first part of this year, and that inflation is declining on a CPI basis. It's not declining that fast when you look at the underlying measures. Even though the underlying measures came in a little bit on the low side of market expectation, and this has got people excited about, maybe the Reserve Bank can pause again at the meeting tomorrow. The trend mean came in at 1.2%. It was expected to be 1.4. As a result of that, the annual rate came down from 6.9% year-on-year to 6.6. The weighted median, also 1.2%, a little bit below 1.3% expectation. That kept the annual rate at 5.8% where it was. So these underlyings are moving very much more slowly on an annual basis, coming down. They did a little bit better than perhaps people were expecting, but still essentially inflation is high. And the way to look at that is, what exactly is current inflation doing? Well, if you're looking at the Q1 CPI, it was 1.4. Annualise that, 5.6. And the underlyings are still annualising at 4.8%. Now, that's way above the Reserve Bank's 2 to 3% target. So, in a way, it's a bit of a surprise that the market has sort of taken to a view that it's a lay-down misere that the Reserve Bank's going to be on hold tomorrow. I think it's much closer call than that. And if anything, the risk is that they may need to tighten a bit further. They're still a long way from being able to declare that they've got inflation safely on a trajectory down over the next 2 years, even to 2 to 3% target band. So that's and even if they did pause tomorrow, they've probably still got to put the rider in there that we could still be lifting rates a little bit more down the track. So either way, it's just bizarre that the market's actually rallied or is sort of looking at towards a top in rates and rates coming down in the fairly near future, when it still doesn't quite look that way from the numbers that we're getting. We had Q1 export prices came out as well, and Q1 import prices. Export prices actually rose by 1.6% quarter on quarter after falling by 0.9%. many commodity prices were a little bit better. The ones that weren't were things like, you know, we had quite a big dip in the oil price there through the course of the first quarter. That was one of the reasons that the CPI was reasonably well contained. Transportation costs actually fell through the course of the Q1. The prices that were rising were largely the ones you'd expect. You know, the ones like rents in housing. Housing was very high. Food prices were very, very high running through the first quarter. Import prices came out for the first quarter. They came down by 4.2%. Then on Friday, we had producer prices, you know, what's in the pipeline. And yeah, this one, again, was interesting. The market was expecting 0.8% quarter-on-quarter. We got 1% quarter-on-quarter. So, yes, the annual rate came back to 5.2 from 5.8, still quite high, though. So, yeah, we still got these pressure points which are running through. And that takes us to this week with, you know, what does the RBA do? The meeting's tomorrow. This may well be the last meeting on the current time schedule, you know, because, you know, there will be a move towards this new committee at some point over the next month or two. And, they will meet on a less regular basis than monthly. I still think the risk is probably that the RBA hikes 25 basis points. Now, that's not what much of the market's saying. Much of the market's looking for it to be stable at 3.6, but we'll wait and see how that pans out. Today, before that, we've got ANZ job ads coming out. These are starting to come back a bit. They were down by 2.4% month on month, going back to March. But they're still up over 60% year on year, so they're still very high. We've also got the monthly inflation indicator that comes out from Toronto Dominion and Melbourne Institute. So have a look at that one to see whether that gives us some clues. And then after the RBA meets, they've got a bit of data. So on Wednesday, we've got March retail sales. The other bit of information I should mention is that over the weekend, you know, obviously we had CoreLogic house prices up again, 0.5%, and you know, up over 1% in Sydney. Yes, they're bouncing off the bottom, but it's not exactly what you want to see at this point. it's one of those factors which may play into the way the RBA sees things. It really doesn't want to give momentum to another real boost running through house prices. And it does speak that, you know, mortgage rates are not painful enough if the housing market can actually pick up at this point. So, we're waiting to see sort of what happens through there. And then on Wednesday, March retail sales come out. They've been up 2 months in a row. They're up by 1.8% going back to the month of January. They were up 0.2% in February. Wait and see whether there's another small increase for the month of March. It looks that way, but wait and see what happens with that number. A strong number. On Thursday, we get March international trade coming out. It'll be another massive trade surplus for Australia. So we had a trade surplus of $13.87 billion going back to February. It looks as if we'll get around about $12.8 billion trade surplus again for the month of March. What's driving this? Not so much volumes on the export side, but you've still got very, very elevated prices for things like iron ore and coal relative to what you'd expect. And this will play in part a bit down the track. You know, second Tuesday in May, we'll get the budget coming out. And, the government's not shouting about it from the rooftops, but it's got revenue coming out of its ears at the moment because, you know, going back to budget time last year, it assumes that the iron ore price would be $55 a ton for the whole of this year. It's running nearer to $120 a ton. The windfall gains in company tax from that are just massive, and so it's really boosting the budget bottom line. But that's a story for a little bit down the track for when they bring out their budget. On Friday this week, we'll have the RBA's monetary policy statement, the quarterly monetary policy statement. That's where they'll look at their forecasts. And their forecasts still have to have pretty high wage growth numbers in them from what we've seen running through the labour market. And we'll still have inflation not likely to come back towards target until the middle of 2025. So, you know, there's a pressure point from those forecasts too when they come out on Friday. Moving to Europe, last week we had April business and consumer sentiment came out. There was a lift, but not as much as the market expected. It only went up one notch from 99.2 to 99.3. We had Q1 GDP, still had a positive sign for it, but yeah, pretty soft. It was only 0.1% increase in GDP. It was flat the quarter before that. The annual rate of growth in European GDP has come down to 1.3% from 1.8%. We've also got the ECB meeting coming up too, where it's likely that they're going to be lifting the cash rate 25 basis points from 3%. The deposit rate to 3.25%. That's this week coming up. Also, ahead of that, we have the April CPI, and it doesn't look good. You know, the preliminary April CPI for Europe looks as if it will rise to 7% year-on-year from 6.9% the month before. The core CPI is just getting stuck at 5.7%. We'll get their March unemployment rate, and that's sitting down at 25-year lows at 6.6%. So, yeah, those are the sorts of factors which are leading into the ECB meeting. Yes, they've got a slowing economy, but they've got very, very high inflation. And if you really want to see high inflation, you know, one country where it's just gone completely against trend is the UK, where on their most recent monthly figures, the inflation rate not only went up, went up quite a lot to 10.5% year-on-year. Yeah, we've got the Bank of England coming over the next couple of weeks, and they've already got their base rate at 4.25%. They've got a fair bit to go yet before they can reach a top on their interest rate hikes. So just watching all those factors at the moment. The bond market is convinced that the slowing economic growth is going to force the hand of the central banks to start to move towards cutting rates. But central banks really still have some work to do to make sure that inflation gets down. So there's just a little bit of a quirk in that. And if you go to things like risk assets, equity markets are saying, well, you know, basically we've got the pivot coming from central banks. Growth doesn't look too bad. We've had some really good earnings growth looking backwards. We're acting as if there's no hope of any recession in the future. It's going to be really strong growth looking ahead. Well, clearly some of these markets are wrong, and we're waiting to see how that correction unfolds over the course of the next month or two. I think the biggest risk obviously runs to risk assets, where at some point they have to realistically build in that the way that central banks have to get on top of inflation does mean recession. Recession's not even remotely built into corporate earnings forecasts at the moment. And so we do have the risk of a rather interesting second half of this year.